jobs and stress and holidays and parents and kids and dogs and anything else that is on your mind. Remember, all talk radio numbers end with the word talk. In Los Angeles, it's 520. In the San Fernando Valley, it's 990. In Orange County, in the 714 area, it's 750. In the 818 area, it's 448. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, it's 244. In the San Gabriel Valley, it's 448. In the South Bay area, it's 679. And in the Compton area, it's 639 talk. And I really would love to hear from you. One of the things that everybody talks about and nobody really understands is the whole concept of stress. Everybody has it, and yet very few people really understand it. Stress isn't all bad. In order to live without stress, you'd have to be dead. Because anything from an exciting game of tennis to a passionate sexual embrace can create stress. But stress is a demand that the body do something. It's a demand made on your body and your mind and your resources. And the times that stress gets out of hand when it's unpleasant is when we have the sense that we may not be up to the various demands that is being made on us. Stress is not merely nervous tensions. Stress is not always the result of damage. Stress is not always something to be avoided. And because a holiday season creates an enormous amount of both physiological and psychological stress, stress is certainly one of the things that we can talk about. I'm going to have trouble with your name. Is it Pahaya?
It's Pahaya.
Yes, welcome. And what can I help you with?
Yes, I'm so glad you stay on the program. I've been trying to get to you all evening.
Well, the lines have been exceptionally busy tonight, so I'm glad that you did get through.
I have called you once before, about 3 weeks ago, at the time when I was having an affair with a married man, and the relationship was going sour.
Are you the one who, after we had spent a long time together, said to me, "How can I get him back?"
Exactly.
Oh, I remember you very well.
Yes.
Okay, what's going on?
Well, we split up. I'm out of the house now, and I found a place to leave. And I am going through a difficult period, going through the tensions of the problems.
But, when you called in before, it was so obvious that you were not looking at the truth of the situation. You were not looking at the realities of it. You were not looking at the fact that he had treated you very badly. All you wanted was to know how to get him back. And we talked for a long time about what a stinker he was.
Yes, I remember that. Yes, and the conversation with you has been very helpful. And I right after I hung up from you, I went to the bookstores looking for the book that was used.
The Mistress's Survival Manual.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you get it?
I didn't get it that night, but the following day I called about half a dozen different bookstores and I was able to get one.
Okay.
I read it twice.
Yeah.
And I get in touch with the reality. So I moved.
Okay.
I took, you know, I think I'm doing all right.
Mm-hmm. You sound better. You sound stronger.
Yes, it takes time.
Yes, it does.
Just going through the depression. I haven't been, dating anyone except just a casual date, like a lunch date,
mm-hmm.
a dinner date, because I still miss him. I'm still in love with him. I miss his, good appearance, winning smile, and good bedside manner.
But none of that makes a relationship. That makes for an infatuation. A relationship is based on what the person is as a human being. How good and kind and loving and considerate and honorable. And he wasn't any of those things. You know, you remind me of a girlfriend of mine who said to me once, "I've met the most exciting, wonderful, marvelous man." And I said, "Good." I said, "What's so marvelous about him?" And she said, "He's 6'3". It's so silly. As if that had anything to do with having a relationship with somebody. I mean, we all love attractive people. We all want to be seen with attractive people and all of that. But you know what? It's got nothing to do with how you're going to feel about that person.
Yes. And the problem is that after I moved out, he was still in touch. He contacted me and asked me out to lunch, and I went with him.
Yeah.
And he's still calling me.
Yeah, see, you're going to have to get very strong. You're going to have to really...
What is he doing to me? Why is he still calling me and asking for dates?
Because he's a rat, all right? Because he wants you, but he doesn't want you. He will give you a little crumb of the relationship, but never a whole loaf. He will keep you dangling. He will play you like a yo-yo, and he will make you crazy if you let him. And if you let him, I'm never going to speak to you again. And I'm not going to take your call next time. Because, you know, we've been round and round in circles about this.
Uh-huh.
You know what the reality is.
Yeah.
Why is he doing it?
Uh-huh.
Because he doesn't care about you. You're a toy to him. You're an object to him. You're something that he can kind of fool around with when he wants to. And I'm sure the sex is marvelous, and I'm sure it's exciting, and I'm sure that, you know, you get butterflies in your stomach. But that's an infatuation. That's not a relationship. He's married. He belongs to another woman. He's not going to be in your life other than at those times that he decides he wants to have a little fun. And you're just being used. And nobody should be used.
Now, second question, how do I get out of this depression?
Why don't you get yourself some counseling?
Yes.
We've talked about that before. Why don't you get yourself into a group, into a woman's group, which I think would be particularly useful for you. And don't try and struggle through this all by yourself.
Yes. Well, I've been trying to do anything that would help, such as...
But that would help. That's the most
buying
important
clothes.
Buying new clothes is not going to do for you what counseling will do for you. Counseling will put this into perspective. It will give you a safe place to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get angry at him, you're going to stop beating up on yourself.
I remember you told me that, but it seems so difficult for me to get angry at you.
Yeah. But you're like the alcoholic who, when you say, if you want to change your life, you have to stop drinking. And he says, oh, anything but that. What you're saying is, you know, you'll do anything except get angry with him. And I'm telling you, you're not going to heal from this until you do that. Because he's treated you very badly.
Yes, I realize.
And I think that the therapy can help you get in touch with the anger that you really feel that you defend against by being such a perfect victim. You are the perfect victim. And you know what? Until you get a handle on that, whether this guy victimizes you or the next guy, somebody else will victimize you.
Yes.
So I want you to get out of that victim role. Because under the victim role is a great deal of rage. There always is.
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, to talking to you helped me tremendously. And then in that I don't feel as hurt as I expected.
I'm glad to hear that.
Really,
and I'll talk to you at any time,
really
Bahia, that you're ready to deal with reality. And I mean that.
I am ready.
All right. So get yourself into therapy. And when you call back, the next time it's going to be with a success story. I just know it. And thank you again for the call.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. I'm Dr. Susan Forward, and another stinker just walked into the studios by the name of Bill Jenkins.
It's your ex-friend.
Who dares to take over his own show at this point in time.
I did you a favor, ex-friend. I'm keeping you off the street.
You're keeping me from my warm, cozy house. Welcome. I will now relinquish the controls
into your very able hands. Hanging in there.
And
it's a booger.
What are you going to talk about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about parapsychology and... Liz McAdams and Raymond Bayless will be here. Liz is the president of the Southern California Society of Psychical Research. Raymond Bayless, author of such things as Phone Calls from the Dead, one of the great parapsychologist researchers in the world, talking about some of the incredible things that they have investigated and uncovered in Italy and in Europe.
How
and we'll be talking about our trip into London.
You know, I never told you this, and we might as well do it on the air while all these people are listening. I had a house once in Hidden Hills that had formerly been owned by an actress by the name of Marie McDonald, who had committed suicide in what was my dressing room. And I don't know where I am with all of this stuff.
She was still there.
I don't not believe it, and I am convinced that that was a haunted house.
Well, Raymond Bayless and the group at the Society look upon this with a great deal of seriousness. You know, it's not woo-woo stuff.
Oh, I know that.
There is certainly something that goes on. There is sort of a lag time between physical and spiritual life. These manifestations absolutely do happen. The data is there. I mean, we're talking data. We're not talking about mystical beliefs.
Yes.
It's a fact. A
no,
lot of
there
people...
were sounds in that house that there were no explanations for whatsoever.
Oh, yes, there were.
Well, yes, I mean, no explanations that I wanted to, that I could have been comfortable with.
Is this
right?
Oh, you don't live there anymore?
No.
Because that can be checked out, and you will find some very amazing things come out of the way, the very scientific way that these things are investigated.
I have always regretted I didn't do that. Yeah. Anyway, if I don't get home, I'm going to regret that I didn't do that. And as I say, welcome to your own show.
Well, thank
and
you.
And I'm so glad to hold down the fort for a while.
I couldn't think of anyone nicer today.
You're not my ex-friend. You know I love you.
I know.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ralph. This is Talk Radio, a forum for new thoughts and fresh ideas, a place to learn and an opportunity to express yourself. Get involved with our newsmakers and our newsbreakers of today and tomorrow. Talk Radio invites your participation. Talk Radio is
Bill Jenkins.
Well, it's old Better Late Than Never, Bill. Here till midnight tonight with this Saturday night version of Open Mind. A little bit of traffic, a little bit of rain, and a little bit of extra Susan Forward for you type. One of our very, very favorite people. But it seems to be in the wind, because our guest also has not arrived. Raymond Bayless and Liz McAdams. Liz is the president of the Southern California Society of Psychical Research. And, of course, Raymond Bayless, one of the giants in paranormal investigation and an author. And I'm looking forward to them getting here just as soon as they can, because they have uncovered some things we want to relate to you that are going on in, well, this strange and misty world of parapsychology. In Italy in particular, some amazing things over there that I wanted to relate to you, or let them relate to you, because they're deeply involved in that research. However, in that they're not here, I always kind of like these moments in themselves. It gives you and I a chance to get together and talk about what's on your mind. We have covered so much territory in the last quarter on the Open Mind Show, and we'll just throw the table open to whatever it is that may be on your mind until such time as Raymond and Liz get here. Let me give you the numbers. In Los Angeles, 520-TALK. In the San Fernando Valley, 990-TALK. If you're in the San Gabriel Valley, your number is 448. That's the 818 number out there, 448. In the South Bay, 679. In the Long Beach area, San Pedro area, that number is 639. And if you're in Orange County, in the 714 area code, your number is 750. If you're in the 818 area code out in Orange County, and some of you are, I didn't know that, but some of you are, your number is 448. And we'd like to hear from you. And for a while, the table is open. Whatever is on your mind. And let's see what's on Alan's mind. Hello, Alan. Welcome to our little open forum here.
Well, I'm glad you got in safe, Bill.
Oh, I did.
Good. Well, I know it's kind of cold out there. I had some questions on parapsychology, and I seem at times to be receptive to the whole area of psychic communication. And I was particularly interested in the realm of communicating with a person who's still alive rather than deceased.
Well, ESP. That does happen. In fact, a lot of people have developed that art. They certainly are working on it in the Soviet Union with a great deal of intensity. The ability to communicate with another person in a mental way, you're talking about.
Yeah, are there degrees of verifiability or credence? I mean, how can you know 100% that you're actually contacting them?
I think just... Did I say this? You're cross-talking with the person you know. However, it doesn't always happen that way. There are cases, particularly where people are close to each other. Let's say a man and wife, brother and sister, or brother and brother, or mother and spouse, that have developed a similar wavelength. Or my good friend Tom Bearden will say that they're on the very same pulsed scalar wave. That they do have these senses that... are in phase with each other, and it does happen. You can develop it. Some people have it in a very, very natural way. And as far as being able to verify it, I think that's being able to talk to the person you're dealing with and say, did you get this message? And you two cross-talk with each other.
I see. Well, I was wondering, too, how one can distinguish between imagination, because I've had strong feelings that I am being close with somebody,
mm-hmm.
and the reality seems to suggest it was only my imagination.
Somebody that you know?
Yes, and I'm not quite sure that that person would necessarily want to be receptive to it, but I necessarily feel in a place of mind that I would like to communicate with that person. In other words, what I'm saying, it seems to be a one-way kind of exploration where the other party isn't so, you know...
open to it.
Open to it, yeah. In other words, is there a way of...
A way of verifying that you're actually experiencing this rather than imagining this. You got to remember that the imagination does play great tricks upon you, particularly when you deal with these areas. This is certainly true with people that are involved with some form of direct communication. After a bit, your mind can actually replace that feeling that you get, and it seems very, very real to you. So you do have to be very careful. I think in this case, it is results that you want to look for until you're really confident about your skills and the results. You have to crosstalk or look at some historical data that's happened in relation with this person, whether or not they know it or not.
I've also heard about people praying for another person, and that was verifiable to the extent where that the person who was prayed for was uplifted out of an illness or, you know, some kind of stress. And would you differentiate between praying and parapsychology?
No, I think that they're very closely related. The ability to transmit energy is what this is talking about in a way. The ability to actually change your future or the future of someone else to your liking is very much a part of the mechanism of the mind and actually of the spirit as well. You can evoke great energies that can do great things.
Yeah. Suppose now that you were to pray for a person who wasn't receptive, but you thought that they would benefit by parapsychology exploration, could you possibly... conceivably turn their thinking around by this parapsychology probe?
That depends upon the strength of your own transmitter, in a way.
Okay.
And the motivation behind why you're doing that.
Well, you've given me some good thoughts, and I appreciate it, Bill.
Okay, Alan. Thank you very much for your call. I hope it was helpful. Okay, Robert, welcome aboard.
Yeah, Bill, how are you doing?
Well, so far, so good.
Yeah, I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
I listen to it quite often. I wanted to ask you, have your guests arrived yet?
Not yet.
Okay, I'd like to ask you, Bill, how much you know about spirit writing or automatic writing. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, indeed. I want you to be very, very careful about automatic writing. Are you involved in doing that yourself?
Well, can I relate a brief anecdote to you? Or not really an anecdote, say it happened to me. Last March, my best friend committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make this as brief as I can. I felt that he was trying to communicate with me because I kept on having dreams about him.
Mm-hmm.
Except that these dreams were unusual in the fact that they were very lifelike. And, you know, and sometimes in dreams something unusual happened.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the case. These were very lifelike, and I felt he was trying to get through to me. So I went to a medium, and what we did is this. It's very often what she had me do. I brought a piece of paper from my house,
mm-hmm.
a blank piece of paper. What she did is she folded it up into a triangle and placed it in a shoebox with three lemons. And with the lemons, she created a triangle. And I brought all the things from my house, the lemons, the shoebox, the paper, everything. So there's no way that she didn't provide any of the materials. And I took it home, and she had me stuff it in my closet. She said she was going to pray about my friend, see if she can get in contact with him. And I brought the shoebox back to her house in 3 days. And what she did is she took the piece of paper, which was blank on both sides, and I examined it very closely. And then she lit a beeswax candle and ran the paper over the candle for about 10 minutes, and she was chanting in some language that I didn't understand. And with my own eyes, right there on the blank piece of paper that I provided from home,
mm-hmm.
a message came through. It was written in Arabic letters, just regular letters that we used. You know, they weren't formed perfectly, but they were definitely letters. And it was a message. I don't know if I was trying to find out if you've heard anybody that can do this, that has the expertise to do this through fraud. In other words, because I'm asking because I brought the paper from home,
mm-hmm.
and the message was such that it was a nickname that only my friend knew. So I just wanted to relate that to you and see what your
thoughts. Well, again, we have to, Robert, look at results.
Mm-hmm.
All of that sounds suspect to me, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way I can tell you that.
Sure.
You went through some hocus pocus, it sounds like, and but you got a name that was very intimate that you feel that this woman would not know.
Oh, absolutely. When I went to her, I did not tell her my last name. I did not tell her my friend's name.
Was all you got was the nickname? Was that
all? No, I got was, I don't want to give his name, but my friend used to call me, my nickname was O-A, the letters O and A stood for a name, nickname. And when she ran this paper over the flame that I got, the letters came through clear as day, O-A, then a space, then the letters U-R, O-A-U-R, and underneath that spelled out friend, F-R-E-N-D. But I was left out of friend. So the whole message was the letters O-A-U-R, friend. In other words, if it was my friend, he was saying O-A-U-R, friend. Maybe he was saying I'm his friend, or he recognized who I was, or something like that. Now, what I'm saying is, how would it be possible, if this was fraud, for her to get these letters onto the blank page?
I couldn't begin to tell you. I've seen some very strange things happen.
Mm-hmm.
With paper and ink, they have absolutely happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And which are mind-boggling, and perhaps this woman is able to do that, and perhaps that is a form of communication that she was able to serve as a catalyst for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the reason for all of the hocus-pocus about it, however.
I don't, Bill.
But that's some sort of a focusing device, maybe. As for how she could psychically pick this up if she was going to try to fraud you in some way or another and get it down on paper, because that can be done in that.
I see. In other words, she could pick up something from my subconscious, say, and project it onto the paper.
Well, I don't know about that. Results, again, is the main thing. Just don't be gullible about it. Take it and look at it. But you didn't get any other information other than...
Well, no, I didn't pursue it.
Yeah.
The reason I did it in the first place is because I listened right after my friend died. I heard you and on your show with the guest who was able to produce Dr. Peoples.
Yes.
And I wanted to...
He'll be here next week, by the way.
He will?
Yeah.
And I want to ask you, while we're on the line, how much, really, do you believe in Dr. Peoples? Do you really believe it's an entity coming through a medium?
All I know is that Dr. Peoples was a real-life human being that existed back in the 1800s. I've got quite a deep dossier on him, which we developed unknown to Thomas Jacobson. He did not know that we were going through him. He was, at that time, a metaphysical teacher and a seer, and he had great abilities even back in the 1800s to look and peer into the future. And he seems to be doing the same thing through Thomas as he is now. Secondly, my personal... association with Dr. Peoples has been one that is phenomenal. His accuracy as to my life and to my research and to many things that only I know about, not even my wife knows about, and he spells them out in candid detail.
So it's beyond fraud.
There is no way that he would know that. And he also did the same thing with Dr. David Viscott. He told Dr. Viscott about his new book, and only David and David's word processor knew about that book. Even his publisher didn't. So again, we have to look at results. In the case of Dr. Peoples, who will be here next week, he has done this right up and down the line with hundreds of people. So we have to, again, results is the thing.
Right. Okay, we have another minute or...
Well, I've got a lot of calls kind of stacked up there, Robert. Make it quick.
Okay, well, I better let you get on to the next call then.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for
Bye.
Contributing. I appreciate it. All right, Michelle, you're on.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
I just want to tell you how much I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I listen to it practically every Saturday. But the reason I called, I've been reading a couple of books, and I don't know if you're familiar with the man or not who wrote them. His name is Jacques Vallée. Does that ring a bell?
I've heard of Jacques Vallée.
He's written The Invisible College, and he's also written a book called Masters of Deception. And his theory, he deals a lot in studying UFOs. I believe he is a computer specialist. That was his original career, and then he sort of went into this as an offshoot. And his thesis is, or something similar to this, is that UFOs are not necessarily hardware from outer space, you know, like from another planetary system or something, but it is oftentimes a manifestation of another form of consciousness that is much higherly developed than we are, and they manifest themselves in what, you know, for example, in the 15th, 16th century, there have been many sightings of what we might acknowledge as a UFO sighting, but because of their way of thinking, they interpreted it as a religious experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, if they didn't understand it, they either killed it or made it religious.
Right. And so now, because we are a much more technological society, we are, whenever someone has an experience that is similar, we are sort of projecting what our culture knows or what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, it's a technological point of view. But his feeling is that these are entities that are amongst us, and they're just more highly developed and not necessarily from another planet. And I was wondering if you had ever considered having him as a guest. He sounded, I've seen a film that he did, or part of a film that he was in, and it was very, very interesting. And I think that he would be worth having on just to discuss this point of view. Also, the psychologist and philosopher Carl Jung emphasized, too, talked about UFOs as being a projection of our own subconscious, our own maybe collective subconscious.
How deeply did it project? I have not read Carl Jung's works on his feelings about what the UFO phenomena might be.
It's very kind of heavy reading, but he seems to think that it is...
That we can project matter?
Yes, and it might be a need. It might be some sort of need that the consciousness needs to, you know, like either a God form or...
Well, you know, I can understand how the human being can project something that it needs, a
mm-hmm.
father figure, a force greater than it,
mm-hmm.
Something to look over and protect and perhaps emulate.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever the human consciousness can go ahead and project something that is of material form,
mm-hmm.
such as the UFOs are,
mm-hmm.
That we can shoot down and they can crash and we can tinker with them
uh-huh.
and get people off of them and put them in cryogenic suspension, I think that this is stretching what Carl was trying to say to a limit. Now, Carl may be true about a lot of the sightings, the so-called sightings that we have had.
Of them.
But not all
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
I think that there has been a lot of, with the UFO, the so-called UFO phenomenon, of people seeing any kind of thing and fashioning it to be a UFO because we didn't understand what it was because it was a little bit out of our normal paradigm. But on the other hand, there is also the fact that they are very real.
What do you think of Ballet's concept, then, of it perhaps, you know, not necessarily being from, like, hardware from outer space, but, you know, just being...
Part of that may be true. We feel that there is a lot of evidence to support that they do travel interdimensionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we don't really comprehend and understand the workings of a very advanced mind and how they can manipulate matter and energy.
Mm-hmm.
As we are able to perceive them with our senses, we see a certain thing, but there may be much more to them than that.
You know, another thing he brought up in his book that I found very, very interesting was the idea of a holographic projection.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, maybe some of the sightings, you know, are for real, but maybe for some reason or another, others aren't for real, but are...
Well, I think a lot of them aren't for real.
I mean, aren't for real. I mean, maybe...
And I think a lot of them are for real.
Yeah, but maybe some of them are done for... Maybe they are projected by people like you and I, you know, on a holographic projection. I mean, this must
We certainly have the ability to do that, by the way.
Pardon?
I said we certainly
have the ability to do that. It's a tremendous... It is a tremendous, I think, a way to manipulate, you know...
We have a marvelous instrument in our heads,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't even touched the surface of what it is.
Yeah.
We're just now beginning to understand the science of scalar interferometry, and that's what our mind is, the left and right hemispheres, mm-hmm. or a scalar interferometer, and this is an incredible tool.
Well, I just appreciate your show so much. And I wish you were on every night.
Right, George.
I know you don't wish you were on every night, but we wish you were on every night. And I hope you'll consider having this man, Jacques Vallée, on. He's very, very...
Well, I have some of his books at home,
uh-huh.
and I haven't considered it in the past. And,
he doesn't intrigue you that much, or...
I haven't been thrilled with what I've read.
Uh-huh.
Let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
But I certainly, I hope I have an open mind.
Well, you know, I think there's something to it. You know, obviously there's something. But
I think all points of view should get on the table. I have no objection to that.
Different, you know.
I'll go back and look at it again, Michelle.
Yeah, it's really worth investigating, I think.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling and contributing to all that, okay?
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're 29 o'clock. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Parapsychology and some phenomena that we wanted to go into deep detail with you with Liz McAdams of the Southern California Society of Psychic Research and Raymond Bayless. And she has arrived. And they will be along shortly, and we'll get into that. You know, from all into Saturday night out there, Liz McAdams just popped in on us. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Bill.
How
so good
you?
To be with you.
I forgot to tell you, we started at 9 o'clock, didn't I?
I am so sorry, too, but I'm so glad to be here now.
And Raymond Bayless is here. Raymond, welcome aboard.
Be here.
Let me get your button pushed up over there. Glad to have you both. You've taken kind of an exciting look at some of the exciting things that are happening in Italy. Do you want to kind of fill us in on what?
Absolutely. It's one of the most fascinating ongoing cases in the world, and Raymond is familiar with a lot of historical precedents for some of these things, but we surely aren't seeing any other things like this, too many at least, in the world. And this is, Bill, a 60-year-old Italian woman in the southernmost province of Italy called Calabria. Her name is Natuzza Avolo, a very uneducated, poor woman with kids and grandkids and what would seem a normal life, except for the fact that she has more than 100 people outside her home every day waiting in line to come and see her. She gives her whole existence, about 6 or 8 hours a day, over to those people. They are absolutely convinced without a doubt that she has healing powers, that many of them see her apparition in their homes when they're praying, that many of them see her in their homes when they're not praying, and many more things that I'm sure we'll want to get into, but that some of her phenomena seem to suggest life after death. She's claimed to be a stigmatist, bleeding, you know, at all of the signs of Christ's traditional wounds, and amazing things happening with that blood.
Where does she do it?
Pardon me?
I know that you've sent some people over there to look at it. Are her claims valid?
Well, it certainly seems to me that the ones that I was able to hear witnesses talk about are. I accompanied Michael Nanko. The Southern California Society for Psychical Research is the first organization in the United States to undertake a fact-finding mission about her. And I must say, Bill, that the people we interviewed seemed extremely credible. They did not seem highly emotional. They didn't seem to have any axe to grind or any reason to be fabricating. And when you could see some of their faces as they would describe, and I'll give you an example, they talk about this. There was a housewife with 4 children, her husband, a member of the Merchant Marine, out at sea a lot. And about a few years ago, all of her children were ill with the flu. She had been praying. In the midst of her prayers, she had mentioned the name of Natuzza. Natuzza, please put in a good word for us.
Mm-hmm.
She was cooking dinner, took it into her children, and while in one of their bedrooms, saw Natuzza's form standing in the doorway as real as you and I. Fully real, seemingly normally clothed and smiling.
Full, firm manifestation.
That's right, standing there as if she were there in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Then fade away. Then the woman, after feeding her children and composing herself, went back into the kitchen, looked over on the kitchen table at a stack of white paper napkins, and noticed a big red splotch in the middle of the top one. Went over to look and see what it was. It was blood, she said, and she watched the blood moving as she watched it, under her eyes, forming into religious formations of a cross, a heart, and something in the shape of a Madonna, with some words in Italian, such as, in his service, this kind of thing.
Hmm.
And Michael and I got to observe several of the interviews, interviewed many, many people who had seen the apparition, several who had this same experience with blood being left on bedclothes, for example, curtains,
napkins. Why the blood?
I don't know. Raymond, maybe you could talk about the precedent for blood being associated with this.
Well, in psychic phenomena, you have all kinds of oddities concerned with blood. In religious psychic phenomena in particular, you have all types of things. For instance, the stigmata itself is something certainly not normal.
Mm-hmm.
So as to why, there's no answer. That's like, you know, it's like saying, why is grass green? I'll be hanged if I know.
Got chlorophyll in it or something, yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean much. But It has an established precedent. And I will add to something that Elizabeth said, is that many observations were made by a Dr. Marinelli. Can't think of his first name, Elizabeth.
Emilio.
Emilio Marinelli, doctor, doctor of engineering, University of Calabria, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He first made the organized study of Natuzza, and others have made studies, various types of professional people. So this is not, the study has not been in the hands of amateurs. It's been in the hands of some good investigators, and all types of interesting things have been seen.
Now, when you went over, Liz, did you go over with her, Raymond?
No.
Did you see Natuzza yourself?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And did she do any of these things for you that you could, firsthand see?
Well, what she did is that she demonstrated that she certainly has some psychic ability, in my opinion. Now, this was not the 40 days of Lent, which is the time that she bleeds. We felt that the first trip should be just to establish trust.
Right.
People are very distrustful of outsiders. And hopefully there'll be a second trip one of these days during Lent when we can go, when the bleeding
happens.
Maybe
that'll be an open mind trip.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, we'll talk about the one to London here in a little bit.
Good. But what we did see, it was interesting. Now, there were two visits to her. The first visit, there was hardly anything impressive. The second visit, I thought there was. The first visit, this woman, I had such great expectations, and she came in and just seemed so nondescript and sort of blah and vaguely bored and not really too excited to have us there, and quickly told us that we were all in perfect health, which may or may not be true. For example, Mike had severe back pains, and she didn't mention that, and that all of our relatives were in heaven and just fine, the ones who were dead, that is.
Well,
and
that's comforting, I suppose.
And Mike showed her photographs of his deceased brother, whom she said was in heaven, and I mentioned his father, who is deceased, and she did tell him that particular relative was in purgatory. And that was it, and we left. That was about it. We asked her if we could give her a series of questions, and she said, no, go ask Professor Marinelli. I'm busy with all these people who really have problems. The second visit, however, was after I had left. I only could stay a week, and Mike was there for 2 weeks. Also, by the way, Vernon Miller was there to take photographs of anything and everything. And, you know, he's was the head research photographer on the Shroud of Turin.
Yes.
And he was very impressed with some of the things that we found in interviews. At any rate, during that particular time, the Italian interpreter was there, and also another woman had joined the group to go to that particular visit. And when they first walked in the door, Natuzza looked at the interpreter and said, you are bleeding, which was absolutely true. The night before, she had begun bleeding unexplainedly and thought it might be a cyst. Natuzza said, you are bleeding, you think it is a cyst, but it's not. It is tumors, and you need to have it looked at. The second thing, she said, one of you here has a serious bone disorder, and you should listen to your doctor's advice. This woman who had joined the party had not been known too long by anyone there, and it turned out has a serious bone disease. In fact, had taken the trip to Italy to sort of get away from it all, get her thoughts together after this disease had been diagnosed.
So she was able to tune in on that very quickly.
That's right. But that is hardly anything, Bill, compared to some of the things about her bleeding itself. When she bleeds at the signs of Christ's wounds, she's in terrible pain, and an awful lot of blood comes from her wrists and her ankles and other parts of her body. And some of the testimony, for example, from a medical doctor, is that when they go to see her during this time, they take their own handkerchief, pure white, sometimes in this case a brand new white handkerchief, and ask permission. She says yes, and they place it on the wound, in this example, on the wrist, hold it there for about 30 seconds while they're talking to her, remove it from the wrist, look at it, and see just the same thing that housewife saw in her kitchen. They see the blood, which moves around and makes these intricate religious symbols right in front of their eyes.
Has anyone ever checked the blood, examined it under a microscope to see if it's really blood? And, you know, what are we really dealing with?
Well,
how much blood did she have?
I was disappointed in a way, because I knew in the United States we would have done a whole lot more than what they've done. The extent that they have done is to determine that it is human blood and that it is type O, which is her type.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the type of a lot of other people.
Yeah, type O is not exactly an uncommon type.
That's what they've done.
But there is no wound there, but she's nevertheless bleeding.
Well, she's bleeding from gaping holes in her skin, which, according to her, open up spontaneously and bleed and then close up. We saw what looked like very deep scars on her wrists and ankles when we were there in the summer. So that had been several months since Easter.
This is not that unusual, though. Well, it's unusual, I mean, but it does happen. People bleed at will, don't they, Raymond?
Yeah, the stigmatic phenomenon is comparatively common. In fact, it's occurred within the last 10 years, or I'd say at least 10 cases in this country, and there are probably many more. No, it's not that uncommon. what isn't generally known, though, is that many other things frequently accompany the thing. For instance, in the case of forming symbols with the blood, that, as we say, it does have a precedent. It has occurred. In fact, there's a case that we have just received notice about. There's a horrible sentence. which involved just that type of thing. In other words, blood and then forming symbols. And it's been known throughout, you might say, psychical history and the history of religious phenomena. But astigmatism is fairly common. I mean, as rare things go. It's like gold. It's comparatively common.
Yeah. Is it always connected with some sort of a religious belief, like in the case of Natusa now? She's obviously Catholic.
Yes, it is.
And it's very much involved with the Catholic belief systems. The others, there's always a religion involved?
So far as I know, there is. Now, there's a common misconception that one will frequently hear, and that is by hypnosis, various types of suggestion, and so forth, stigmata has been reproduced. It is not true. What has been done is an effusion of blood through the skin. In other words, you probably get small capillaries bleeding and things of that type. But you do not have wounds open up into the skin, and you do not have wounds close up. You're not capable of running a probe clear through the hand and things of this type, plus the fact that the blood and the other type of things is never perfumed or luminous. But as I say, it's a very common misconception that this has been done by suggestion, but it hasn't.
Yeah, this one is unusual in that the wounds seem to open up.
That's right.
Yeah, they do.
It's not just seeping out of the skin, as it were, as we know about.
That's right. These deep gashes. You know, when Raymond mentioned perfume, that's another aspect of it. A lot of the people, right before seeing her apparition, will sense this overwhelming, beautiful aroma of perfume pervading the room in their home. And it's not a scent that they have around the house.
It's a very common thing with religious phenomena, again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a phenomenon we're talking about tonight. And Liz McAdams and Raymond Bayless are with me from the Southern California Society of Psychical Research that wanted to look into it personally so that they can bring it back to you and let you look at it, put it on the table. And that's what we're about. We have 2 hours of that tonight. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about our little trip to London.
Oh, good.
And we want everybody to go. And certainly open up the telephone lines to you to talk to Raymond and Liz. I wish you'd been here a little bit earlier. I got some questions that were in your ballpark.
I bet you answered them great.
Well, I hope I handled them so-so, you know, to get into that. And we'll be back with you in a second. It's to manipulate. Are you familiar with the Spiricum?
Oh, sure.
What do you think about it?
Not much.
Not much? There you go. How come?
I beg your pardon?
I said, how come?
Practically very little evidence.
Well, that's true. We only have the...
All they can produce evidence, for instance, is with the other type of tape-recorded voice and more or less repeatable. It's just, it rests more or less on one incident, so to speak.
Yeah, about 40 hours of conversation.
There's no evidence.
Between, the only evidence that they have is of this Dr. George Mueller, that the information they got through here did check out.
That isn't evidence.
Well, about him... phone call, private numbers, as I recall, unlisted telephone numbers with...
Yeah, I don't like to speak about somebody else's work.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I did, really.
No, that's okay. I knew when I asked you, Raymond, you were going to tell me flat out.
It was pretty flat. Well, Raymond, you're not saying that you don't... You obviously, for people who might not have heard of the thing before, you're not saying anything against the phenomenon in general, because, of course, you were one of the co-discoverers that even existed, the fact that using tape recorders on a high amplitude in silence, one is able occasionally to receive a voice and sometimes a few words or, I think in your experience, at the most, a sentence or two.
The electronic voice phenomenon, yeah.
And you've you've done this, of course, yourself, so you're not saying anything against the whole
phenomenon. Not at all.
Phenomenon.
No, if I were saying anything against the phenomenon, I'd damn myself.
You'd damn yourself on that.
No, the phenomenon is real. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's like all things in psychical research. You have to investigate individual cases.
Right. They are busy putting together a lot more structured, formatted, documented evidence in this particular phenomenon that they're working with, and trying to also at the same time improve their equipment. They're having to move into much higher frequency ranges in order to establish this communication if they can. They have established this communication on a lower level, but it seems like that the people that they establish it with, they are on the lower level themselves on the other side. And
you see,
they're moving up.
The curious thing about that is that's contrary to all examples of the tape-recorded voice phenomenon, because you can do it with any instrument. In fact, to the cheapest